Last Tuesday, you and I were once again assaulted by the sordid revelations of gross and criminal sexual abuse of children by Catholic priests. We were stunned by the venal betrayal and deliberate concealment of those crimes by Catholic bishops. In conversations with many of you, I've listened as you've described a welter of reactions: anger, confusion, outrage, revulsion. I've stood by, silently for the most part, as you expressed your criticisms of the church and voiced your demands for change, calling for resignation of bishops, abolition of statutes of limitation, and even an end to priestly celibacy. As for me, I'm not there yet. I don't have such clarity. I just feel raw and hopeless. After several painful hours of poring over the entire Pennsylvania grand jury report, I could not summon yet again anger or revulsion. Instead, I flashed back to a moment in 2005 when I stayed up all night and read eerily similar accounts of lurid and predatory behavior in the Philadelphia grand jury report on clergy sex abuse. 13 years later, seemingly very little has changed. So no, what I feel keenly this morning is not outrage. Rather, in a way I have never experienced before, I feel profound discouragement in the vocation I chose so willingly 45 years ago. Discouragement as a priest in a world where brother priests could behave so grotesquely. Discouragement as a priest in a church where bishops could act with such blithe depravity to protect an institution. Some Catholics, in their loss of confidence in the church, might say, "I place my faith in Jesus Christ, but I reject the church because of its hypocrisy." Or, "I've given the church so many chances, but it continues to disappoint me. No more." Well, for me, that choice is not possible. Not because I'm a priest with no other options. It's simply because, for me, to choose Christ is to choose the Church of Christ. For me, there is no Jesus without the Church. For me, St. Paul's words to the Corinthians are not mere pious pap. They are gospel truth. No one can lay any foundation other than the one that has been laid, and that foundation is Jesus Christ. 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 11. It is through the Catholic Church that I came to know and love Jesus, and to know how much I am loved by him. It is through ordination in the Catholic Church that I have learned to love and serve Jesus by serving you, his brothers and sisters. For me, to walk away from the church would be to walk away from Jesus, and that I cannot do. As I have struggled with discouragement these days, asking where is Jesus in all this darkness, I find myself back at Good Friday, standing at the foot of the cross, contemplating the broken heart of Jesus as he aches over the devastating pain of those boys and girls violated by my brother priests. And I try to imagine what he feels. In the third week of the spiritual exercises, St. Ignatius encourages the retreatant to strive to enter the consciousness of Jesus as he walks through the Passion. Ignatius tells us, if we truly want to love Jesus, then we should ask for the grace to feel sorrow with Jesus in his sorrow, to feel broken in spirit with Christ who is so broken, to shed tears because of the great suffering which Christ has endured. As best I recall, I've only prayed for that intimidating grace twice in my life. Once when I made the long retreat in the novitiate, and then 20 years later when I made it again in tertianship. Until last week, I'm certain that I never knew what it felt like to be broken in spirit. But I do now, and that's a dangerous place for a disciple to be. I recognize that what I'm feeling is spiritual desolation. Ignatius instructs us to be wary of desolation because it so easily can become a strategy by which the devil, the enemy of our human nature, diverts us from the good we have proposed to do and numbs our sensitivity to the urgent need for love and service and forgiveness in the world. Discouragement can lead us to question, what's the use of praying? What's the use of sacrifice? It's all a waste. It's all a sham. To counteract such hopelessness, Ignatius encourages us to strive earnestly to make some temporary changes in our life. He expressly urges us, for instance, to find some additional time for prayer and perhaps to practice some suitable penance. Usually, we think of penance as a way to atone for our sins. Here, however, Ignatius proposes it rather as a way of showing God how desperately we want to experience healing and to recover hope in our life as disciples of Jesus and as disciples within the church. And so, my brothers and sisters, I regret that I may not be able to help you with your confusion and indignation in these dismal days, though I am certainly willing to listen. But I know that, for myself, over the next several weeks, I need to find an extra 15 minutes each day just to sit quietly at the foot of the cross and try to soothe the aching heart of Christ. And within the next day or two, I need to find some penance that I can perform for the next month or so to show God how wholeheartedly I want honesty and accountability and justice in our church. So I ask you to pray for me, and I promise to pray for you too. And I commend us both to Mary, the Mother of God, whom we will always find waiting with us at the cross of Jesus.